everyone, welcome to Anatomy of an Agency with me, Katie Traxton. This podcast shares the experiences of people in the public eye who work in the business of sport and entertainment. Whether you're looking to work with talent or for your own representation, we hope to give you honest insight into how things work. The good, the bad, and everything else in between. In this episode, we speak to Jonathan Overend, who has a 35-year-long career as a sports broadcaster, working as a commentator for the BBC, amongst others. I caught up with him at Paris 2024, where he was working for Five Live, and asked him how he started his career.
How I got into it, I suppose, on reflection, is by sort of doing my own commentaries off the television as a sports mad kid. I mean, I remember, here we are talking at the Paris Olympic Games, I remember waking up in the middle of the night at the Seoul Olympic Games to watch Ben Johnson win the ill-fated 100 metres final that year. And I remember vividly sitting there in front of the television with my cassette recorder. That dates it, doesn't it? Recording my own commentary on Johnson obliterating the world record, and obviously it turned into quite a big story. But I remember doing football matches and anything that was on the telly at the time. Basically, I used to love just watching whatever was on terrestrial television, and as well as watching it, I'd invariably sit there with my cassette recorder doing a commentary on it as well, much to my parents' annoyance in all probability. But that, I mean, that's, I guess, how it started.
But I guess at that point in time, unless you happen to have a family member in the industry, there wasn't really a way to shortcut what you're describing. Mm. Whereas now, with social media, other platforms, TV shows you can go on, people can kind of try and use profile fame to shortcut their way into industries. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, I guess that can happen, and I guess it does happen as well. I just think you can't beat those years of passion, early passion for whatever it is that you are passionate about, and developing your skills within that passion. And I guess that's what then took me from that sports mad early teenager into being a late teenager who then started to get shifts at his local radio station. And that came from badgering the editor and saying, please let me come in and work for £10 a week or whatever it was in the early 90s. But it was basically being a tea boy on a Saturday afternoon. But it was getting that foot through the door that really was the next stage to my journey.
Well, it's kind of that thing about doing anything for 10,000 hours makes you an expert at it, isn't it? That kind of theory. Do you respond now when young people reach out and can you feel that passion that you had in them and they say to you, can you help me? Do you always want to go back to them and give them that advice?
Yeah, I think if I see that passion immediately, then that's a great start, because I can see a little bit of me in that email or that conversation or whatever it might be. And I think that's a great starting point. You've got to be passionate about what you do, or indeed what you want to do. And then it's about making contacts, being nice to people on the way up, and you know, just developing those relationships that hopefully will get you somewhere later in life. You've got to have that little bit of luck, of course you have, right place, right time and all that. But getting that foot through the door in the first place is so important. And when I think back to me and my BBC career, if I hadn't have got that first foot through the door of 198 New London Road, Chelmsford, which was where my local radio station was based, you know, would it have panned out the way it has? I don't know. Maybe not. I might have had to have gone down a different route. But for me, just getting through that door, getting those early T-boy shifts on a Saturday afternoon, working my way up gradually was how I ended up getting a full-time job at the BBC.
Okay, so passion, hard work, networking, a little bit of luck. Is that enough, or is there this elusive thing that is just raw talent that you also need to throw into that mix?
That's a good question. I would say all of those things you've mentioned come first, because I think you can have the talent, but without the luck, you may not be in the right place at the right time. You can have the talent, but not necessarily the passion. And that might come across in a business like sports commentary, for example. You could be the most incredible wordsmith, and you might project your voice like the very best actor at the National Theatre. But if you haven't got the passion for your subject, you will be found out. or that will come across in the way you deliver what you're supposedly passionate about. So I think absolutely you need raw talent, you need raw ability, but all of those other qualities I think come first.
You're also part of a team, no matter how good you are. What do you look for in the people commentating alongside you, or a pundit you may be throwing to, or a presenter that's introducing you? What are the important assets in the people around you and that you bring to them?
Teamwork is everything. It really is. In broadcasting, if you've got a team with an outlier, or one person that maybe doesn't prepare as much or work as hard or is as passionate as everybody else, that person does stand out. You can't get away from that. Now, I'm not saying that person should immediately be chucked off the team, but maybe they need to work harder, or you as a collective need to work harder to find that common goal. I mean, I guess like a sports team, if you have one player that isn't quite at that level. So I think teamwork is absolutely important. Preparation is everything in sports broadcasting. You've got to be ready for the unexpected, the moments that may happen. That's when you're
scenario
really
planning.
Found out. Absolutely. It's like, is a world record going to be broken today? If so, what is the world record? Who's most likely to get it? If it goes, how long's that world record stood for? Things like that. That's the preparation, and a lot of those sort of statistics and facts that we look into when preparing for a commentary may never be used, but that's a really important part of it. And again, going back to your point about teamwork, you want everyone to feel like they're right across that. There are times when you work alongside somebody who maybe has just walked in 5 minutes before the match begins and sits down and says, where are my notes? It's like, well, that's part of the job. That's part of the preparation. And to me, that is a really key aspect of sports broadcasting, being prepared for absolutely anything. And as I say, what may happen.
Is that combination of skills timeless? Or do you see the way things are done changing over time? Is there even a difference between working on Tokyo in 2021 and Paris in 2024?
I think in sports commentary, data is a huge thing. Statistics, AI in terms of driving the data that the coaches use. I think it's really interesting how sports broadcasting is using that data to inform its broadcasts. So that is a really big thing. But I think sometimes with commentators, there is a danger that too much of the commentary is based around numbers and facts and what is on your sheet, if you like, in front of you. Don't get me wrong, it's a huge part of what we do, but I've always believed that sport is about emotion, it's about passion, it's what it can do to you inside. And I want to go to a sports event and feel something inside and feel like it's my job to convey that to the audience. They're at home, they're in their car, they're wherever they may be, taking in this event, and you are the voice describing it. Now, tell me what it feels like being
there. It has to be contagious.
Absolutely, on centre court, in that athletic stadium, at that race circuit, wherever it may be. And that's what you can't write down on a fact sheet. That doesn't appear on a data screen, you know, how good that feels, or how disappointing that feels if someone, you know, gets overtaken in the final stride. And we've seen that here at the Olympics in track and field races, in rowing races, in the velodrome. It happens all the time, and that's a big moment. And as a commentator, you feel it. You feel the disappointment of that athlete, or the elation of the person who wins. So to me, that's a really important side of broadcasting that I would always encourage younger people coming into the industry to feel as passionate about as I do. You know, the data thing's great, but invariably it's on the internet somewhere. Someone can look that up at home while watching. Now, put that to one side, use it for sure, but now tell me what it feels like being there. And that's where the emotion of sport can really get you as a viewer and a listener.
Audiences will always be changing, because there'll always be new generations coming through and they'll always have different interests. You would think, as I listen to you, that being able to transmit human emotion from one person to another should transcend any kind of generational divide. And yet, We see NBC coming to the Olympics saying, well, we need to work with Snoop Dogg because of his profile and how he can speak to his audience. We need to bring Sesame Street characters to be broadcasting from the games to speak to the younger generation. Do you think that's what we should all be thinking about moving forward? Which presenters, which broadcasters fit which audiences? Or do you think there's this ability that transcends everyone?
I mean, I could kind of give you a wishy-washy answer here and kind of semi-agree with you, but I'm going to stick my neck out and say no, I don't agree with that at all. And here's why. On the first weekend of these Olympic Games, they said to me, right, you're doing the BMX cross-country, mountain biking. I said, okay, right. You do realise I know nothing about this. And they said, yeah, we realise that, but, you know, needs must. So for about a week, I'm preparing to do this race, Tom Pidcock, in the men's BMX cross country.
Yeah, fantastic race.
And it turns into this incredible race. And here's a guy, you know, a 52-year-old guy who knows nothing about bikes or biking or bike racing. And I find myself commentating on one of, if not the most dramatic thing I've ever commentated on.
That was sensationally exciting.
And the clip goes viral. My teenage daughters are going, Dad, do you realise you've got over 1 million views on TikTok? I go, no, of course I don't. You know me, I'm not on TikTok. But look, I'm using that as an example of kids are watching that and they're saying, wow, did you watch that finish? Did you hear that commentary? Did you see that race? And do they care that the bloke whose voice is on it is 50 something and knows nothing about bikes? Not in that moment. You know, my teenager daughters are going to share that to their friends and they're going to share it on, and everyone's a teenager in that particular viral world. So I would argue that absolutely you don't necessarily need someone of that age talking to people of that age. If you can make it exciting, if you can draw out that passion that I was talking about earlier, I think I think there's life for us old guys, yeah.
Do you feel like you've ever been judged on your demographic rather than your ability when going for jobs?
No, I don't think so, no. I'm lucky enough to work now for Sky Sports on their tennis programming, Sky Sports Tennis. We're off to the US Open and some big events later on in the year. And, you know, to get that job in my 50s is incredibly lucky. And I think, well, why has that happened? And the only thing is the career I've had and hopefully the talent that people have pointed to and said, right, that's the guy for that job. And as I say, incredibly fortunate and unexpected from my point of view to get that particular gig at this stage of life. But I come back to that point that if you're passionate about what you do and you're able to project that, I absolutely believe that you don't need to have young people talking to young people, because it's about the moment. It's about how that is projected as an extraordinary moment. And we've had a few here at the Games. We've had a load in tennis over the last couple of years with the greatest era we've ever seen. And I don't think you necessarily need to bring in a teenager to talk to the teens. As I say, I think the moment speaks for itself. And I'd like to think that if sport and certain sports are to survive and to build audiences in that new demographic, they should put the sport first. It's the sport that matters. How is this being presented? What is the actual competition like? Don't worry as much about the fluff around the edges.
Speaking of the sport, there are lots of sports people who, when they retire, younger than most of us retire, are really keen to transition into the world of media and broadcasting. What value do you think someone who's been fantastic at a sport but really hasn't operated in the broadcast world yet can add, joining you potentially immediately on an Olympic broadcast or Wimbledon or whatever it might be?
Well, I think there are so many really, really good broadcasters who have been athletes. You know, there's absolutely no doubt that some of the very, I mean, you know, Gary Lineker is probably the most famous sports broadcaster in the country. brilliant footballer, brilliant broadcaster. And if he's at the top, you can go down through 20, 30, 40, 50 people in the UK alone who have had stellar careers as both athletes and broadcasters. So absolutely, it's possible. What I would say is it's really competitive. Really competitive. I mean, just look at the BBC team at the track and field, for example. You've got really good athlete stroke broadcasters who struggle to get a place on that team because there's Michael Johnson and there's Jessica Ennis and there's Denise Lewis and there's Colin Jackson and Steve Cram and Steve Backley. I mean, there isn't room for everybody. So what that tells me is you've got to work hard. You've got to be prepared to make that new career. It won't come easy. You can't just slide into retirement and say, give me a microphone and away we go. The people I see succeeding in the broadcast world now who have been athletes have really worked hard at it and have found their niche, if you like, found their place in the broadcast world. A guy who immediately comes to mind is a guy I knew from when he was competing, Latelo Mohamed in Taekwondo.
Great guy,
great athlete. If you'd have said to me 10 years ago, would a Taekwondo athlete be one of the breakout stars at the Olympic Games in broadcasting, I've sort of laughed you off. But Latelo has done brilliantly on Eurosport, from what I've seen, and has a brilliant career ahead of him. Not just as a Taekwondo pundit, but as a presenter, as a reporter, as a man about town, as a studio pundit. You know, great stuff. So I think he's sort of carved out a role for himself, as so many younger athletes have in the broadcast world. But yeah, don't expect it to be easy, because there's a lot of competition.
I mean, we're hearing that you're by no means coming to the end of your career. You're entering into new positions and opportunities. But as you do get older, what do you want your legacy to be to the broadcasting world? And how are you supporting the next generation of broadcasters coming through?
Well, I'm always open to talking to younger broadcasters, because I think it's a really tough industry to succeed in. And if you're coming out of university now, for example, with a, you know, broadcast journalism degree, well, great, you know, great that you've dedicated 3-4 years of your life to getting that qualification. But then the hard work begins. It's like, okay, I've got the qualification. Now, how do I get my foot through the door? How do I work my way up to hopefully get a position that you've been lucky enough to have? Well, it then is about contacts. I always say to people, you know, write a letter. Seems a weird old thing to say, doesn't it? But because we don't write letters anymore, if you do happen to receive a letter,
cuts through.
It really cuts through. I mean, it sounds bonkers, doesn't it, in a sense, that you sort of back to the 80s, let's all write letters all of a sudden. But look, it sets you apart. And just anything that can lift you above the crowd, I think, is really important. So in addition to your experience and your qualifications, are you going to be remembered by the person you have a conversation with, for example? If you are having that conversation, find out a bit about the other person. Ask them questions. So the person may go away thinking, wow, yeah, they really had done their homework. And they were really interesting. That was a really interesting chat. That was a good question they asked. So those little points of difference is really important, I think. But I'm always open to speaking to younger people coming into the industry, because I think it's really important that we share good practice, best practice across the working industry. I by no means want to sound like I'm sort of preaching and this is the way it has to be done, because I think individuality is really important, that new people in the industry bring their own personality in, and I can't coach someone how to bring their own personality in. That comes effortlessly, hopefully. But that point about feeling the passion of the sport is so important, and I'd always encourage that to be very high on anyone's priority list if they do want to have a career in sports broadcasting.
Invaluable advice for anybody looking to start a career in sports broadcasting. Please do listen to more episodes of Anatomy of an Agency to learn more about the talent industry, and let us know what you think. Contact us on social media at Good Vibes Only Talent. And for now, from me, it's goodbye.